behind those beautiful children. They're wonderful. Just got to see which glass. Leviticus 19, 1 to 2, Leviticus 19, 11 to 32. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the entire assembly of Israel and say to them, 'Be holy because I, the Lord, am your God, am holy. Do not steal, do not lie, do not deceive one another. Do not swear falsely by my name and say profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Do not defraud or rob your neighbour. Do not hold back the wages of a hired worker overnight. Do not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Fear your God, I am the Lord. Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favouritism to the great, but judge your neighbour fairly. Do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbour's life. I am the Lord. Do not hate a fellow Israelite in your heart. Rebuke your neighbour frankly so you will not share in their guilt. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbour as yourself. I am the Lord. Keep the decrees. Do not mate different kinds of animals. Do not plant your field with two kinds of seed. Do not wear clothing woven of two kinds of material. If a man sleeps with a female slave who is promised to another man, but who has not been ransomed or given her freedom, there must be due punishment. Yet they are not to be put to death, because she had not been freed. The man, however, must bring a ram to the entrance up to the tent of the meeting for a guilt offering to the Lord. With the ram of the guilt offering, the priest is to make atonement for him before the Lord for the sin he has committed, and his sin will be forgiven. When you enter the land and plant any kind of fruit tree, regard its fruit as forbidden. For 3 years you are to consider it forbidden. It must not be eaten. In the fourth year, all its fruit will be holy, an offering of praise to the Lord. But in the fifth year, you may eat its fruit. In this way, your harvest will be increased. I am the Lord your God. Do not eat any meat with blood still in it. Do not practice divination or seek omens. Do not cut the hair at the sides of your head or clip off the edges of your beard. Do not cut your bodies for the dead or put tattoo marks on yourselves. I am the Lord. Do not degrade your daughters by making her a prostitute, or the land will turn to prostitution and be filled with wickedness. Observe my Sabbaths and have reverence for my sanctuary. I am the Lord. Do not turn to mediums or seek our spiritualists, for you will be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. Stand up in the presence of the aged. Show respect for the elderly and revere your God. I am the Lord." And Matthew 2:37-39, Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbours as yourself." Amen.
Thank you, Margaret. Ian Douglas will now deliver the sermon.
Thanks again, Jeff, and thanks, Margaret, for that reading. Today, I have had published all the notes of the sermon and a text, but you'll find I won't quite adhere to it, because if I do, I spend the time looking down and I'm never sure what my congregation think of what I say. I'm a sort of eye-to-eye person, likes to know that things are going right. I'm not checking whether you're going to sleep. I just like to communicate. So if you're using that text, I'll be on it often, but sometimes I'll stray. So recently you've had the opportunity to complete our survey for the upcoming presbytery visitation. We've received over 60 replies. That means we should have a good idea of what our members think of our church. Section 1 simply addressed our members' positions, whether you've worshipped here for the last 2 years, whether you worshipped in another Presbyterian church, whether you worshipped in another church altogether. That's simply, all that information is simply to give us an idea who you are, where you're going. And of course they ask sometimes embarrassing questions, age, sex, what you've been doing in the past. You shouldn't be embarrassed because these are all anonymous questions. These are quite anonymous. Many years ago, once again, I was in New Guinea, and in my insurance business career, I was an inspector. I had to complete claim forms. A lady came to me and she had a client, an accident in a car. She's about 30 or 35 years of age, but I had to ask her age for the claim form, and she said, "I'm not going to tell you." So I had a bit of a problem here, and eventually she said, "If you look the other way, I'll write it down on the claim form." It worked. From that I realised all my claims people want to know was whether she's under 25. So for the rest of my career, as long as a person looked well over 25, I simply put down my birth date. Hundreds of claim forms had the 12th of November on them. I never ever had a complaint from the claims department, but it worked. Talking New Guinea, I had some time up there, and if you want to know how important that MMM mission is in their work, and all our missionaries, you note they're teaching some of the locals how to dig a hole. While I was up there, a friend of mine said, "You know, I invented the wheel in New Guinea." I said, "Well, you must be older than what you look." He said, no, it was in 1952 when we were building the airport at Goroka." I said, "Right." He said, "Well, in those days, there was no ready-mixed trucks. You just rigged up a cement mixer. There's probably MMM have to do, and tip it into a barrel and away you went." So he set the locals up, got the mixer going, tipped it in, and four of them got hold of the barrel and carried it around and tipped it in. Being an Australian, he let them do it to the smoker, then he picked up the barrow, and they went, "Ah." Oh. He said, "I invented the wheel." So to get back to your survey, I wonder what mine's going to say. Many of you will know my wife's Roman Catholic, so I sign this thing and they know I'm an elder. But down the bottom, my family don't come to church. So someone's going to say, "This bloke's a bit odd." But those questions were all virtually if we, as the leaders of the church, are doing the right job and whether you're enjoying the experience. You're encouraged to use your skills. They ask, would you like to have more involvement in the church? Use your talents. We're just given a pretty good example of that. Do us as leaders support you sufficiently? Are you involved in Bible studies, etc.? Are you familiar with the Westminster Confession of Faith? I'll mention that again later, but these questions are there simply so we can get an idea whether we're using the talents of our members. Pretty simple task, isn't it? You've got to realise that a person came and a very talented musician came here and sat in the pews for 2 years and didn't let us know. I won't tell you that person's name, but many of you will, which I'm sure will know. Section 4 came and asked what your beliefs were, how you perform as a Christian, how you think your church is performing both for you and for the community, and how you think us as your leaders are performing. Once again, simply so we can get an understanding of where you're up to and where we're up to. This visitation, can I tell you, it used to be feared when instead of everyone smiling in churches, people looked dourly down their nose at the congregation and talked very loudly with fire and brimstone. Thankfully, the Lord's arranged us for change from that. Although a friend of mine still tells me I'm not doer enough to qualify as a session clerk. We're a happier bunch, and that's the way we should be. Visitation is not something to be feared. Now they're just going to have a good look at us, see what we do. In the old days, they might come and say, "Show us your records, show us your minutes, how are you going?" And at one stage, we received a visitation at a very hard time in the church, and the presbytery went away and they sacked the whole of us elders, removed us from the church, and it was a pretty sad event. Luckily, you're part of a church that has a number of courts to which you can appeal if something goes wrong, if you're badly treated or you don't understand what's going on. And we did that. And when they realised they were in the wrong, we were reinstated. And thankfully, since then, and with the great help of Paul, our church has blossomed. And the great help of all of you people who put your talents together for us to achieve what we're doing. Back to the church courts. We think it's important you understand them, and some of it's quite simple. The Committee of Management obviously looks after the maintenance and care of our buildings, all the property, helps to make sure funds are there so our ministries go on. It's a simple, quite a simple but important job. With us, we've got the manse to look after. I note there's another quote there that's going to shock the funds, but we have to maintain our property, and that body does a good job. Just above or equal to that body, you have the session. When I say above or equal, session is simply about your spiritual growth and the church's spiritual growth to help you understand the word. And when I say you, I don't feel that I'm the greatest authority on the Bible, but it's beautiful to be part of an organisation where I can tap into that information. Above the presbytery. So the presbytery, it's made up of ministers and representatives from Tookley, the entrance, Woi Woi, Gosford, and the Terrigal. And they meet once a month, and or once every second month, whenever necessary. And they, it's another court of appeal. If you have a problem with the press, with the session, you could say to them, you could go to them and take your problem to them. And above that, again, there's another court of appeal in the General Assemblies. They meet generally once a year in New South Wales in July. It's a great occasion if you had a chance to go there, to be among 300 or 400 people and just feel the spiritual strength of the church. What they do is they look at every issue, any appeals about behaviour. They'll look at whether our laws should be changed. So both the New South Wales and Australian Assemblies are very, very important. Negatively, as I say, we go back to the session, we are also at times required to talk to people, perhaps chastise them if they've fallen away, if their understanding of what we're teaching isn't correct. But if any member of the church considers we are too harsh on those people, then they could virtually take an appeal to presbytery and say, look, the session doesn't understand, just as we did in the past. So what we're saying is you need to understand the courts of the church. They work for you. We think it's a great setup. We do move. The Presbyterian Church has always been accused of moving slowly, but sometimes it's better to make your decisions slowly and make sure they're correct. Enough for the courts. The next question is, what does Tookley think of our church? Now, thank you very much. It'd be much better if you operated, because I'll lose track. Frankly, that's what they see. That was the old church. If we go to the next slide, there we are. So what does Tookley say about it? It's a big building with a blue roof. It got faded to grey, and now it got faded to white, and now it's grey. If we have a look, and they've got a big parking lot, but you're not allowed to use it. It's pretty hard to get a park in Tookley. I can tell you, if we were that progressive, we said, right, I will charge them, I don't think anyone would pay. But that may be a thought for the future. But that's what I think is what they say. And in the past, it wasn't always this rosy. Disaster did strike this church some years ago, if we can move on. And our little church looked like that. And the next slide, you can't see it properly there, but it's actually sitting on the back of a low-loader semi-trailer. It was to be carted away. Someone locally mustn't have liked this, or perhaps it was just a couple of young kids. But thankfully, I was in a position, and I received some criticism for this of having a conflict of interest. Unbeknownst to me, I was the convener of the Indemnity Fund Committee that looks after the insurance for all the churches in New South Wales. And unbeknownst to me, a company that I owned, my broking company, was the broker for the, had become the broker for the church. It sounds as though, I'm not saying two different things here, I just wasn't involved in the decision. The broker who had a look at that said, it was, we were about to build this church, it was loaded, it was actually given to Beth Shan if we could, they could use it. And it got burnt down, and my broker knocked the claim back. Thankfully, I knew the policy back to front. It was worded so it became a claim. So sometimes God puts the right person in the right position. But it was a mess. You can see by the next slide, it was just nothing left. I'm sorry. That went too fast for me. Just, well, I'm not doing it. That, I just love that next slide, though. We can go to it, I'm pretty sure. What I was going to tell you about, well, it was this, about the time that happened, I was here doing something around the church, and the two boys walked across here, and one of them said, see that church? See that church there? That's the Poppy's church. I was 46. I was a bit dismayed. But you have to realise that was our, that was what we, that was, and sometimes at the moment still is. We are what we are. So if we go back to my beautiful tree, do you remember a couple of weeks ago Paul referred to John 15, which says, this is where it gets hard if I haven't got my glasses. I am the true vine. I won't quote that exactly what it says, but I trim the bad branches that have borne off the tree, and the new branches bear fruit wonderfully. You can see that's a comfort tree. I wouldn't be able to count the number of comforts on it. There's another thing about that too. You think in Leviticus 19, they said about when you get to the land and you plant a tree, the fruit is forbidden for 3 to 5 years. The reason is that citrus trees and a number of trees, if they bear too young, the weight of the fruit kills them. So what we do, if you look at the bottom of that tree, that's actually a graft. So what I say there is Leviticus is still right. It is the Lord's word. But as human beings, we've gone on somewhat from the day of that. Might be a trick, but it works very well when you graft a tree if you want citrus straight away. So, I mean, what do we need the locals to say? There's that beautiful big roof on that church. Lovely hall. We know they, we call it the election church. When the pre-poll's on, they run that. What we need them to say is that church, we may have another slide there. Not particularly that one. As graphic as it is. If we go to, do you have Jaffa there, Leon? I still like that one too. Do you have the Jaffa slide there, Leon? So what that brings us to is what we need. That church has a great children's program. That church has great family fun days. That church has a coffee program at the street. That church has a care program for the community. That's how we want the people outside the church to see us. And this is your opportunity, actually, to show people the heart of your church by showing that every day you lead a true Christian life and you love your neighbour as yourself. This is your opportunity to use God's talents to take these messages from the Bible and from Jesus Christ to the people of our community. Look, you may not be too keen about going out aggressively addressing the public in our in some of our endeavours and perhaps being accused of being a Bible basher, trying to push word into someone's ear that's not listening. And I really think in that regard, the farmer's idea of ploughing the fertile land's better. But what you can do is show the whole community that you are a happy Christian person enjoying a great Christian life. And it's not hard. We don't have to be unhappy. In fact, the Bible tells us to be joyful. Earlier this month, Paul gave us a great sermon, actually, saying that virtue said, it's not what we look like, it's what we are. And of course, that is the point of this address, that it's not what we look like, it's not if we've got the best looking church, it's what we're doing. And frankly, with your involvement, and that means everybody's, I believe we're doing a great job. So the ball is in your court to try and take up that challenge. But if I was you, I'd think, well, am I qualified to be the heart of the church? Do I know enough about the Bible? Do I know enough about the Presbyterian Church? So there's two ways you can get that information. Firstly, we mentioned before in the survey, you're asked about the Westminster Confession of Faith. Between that Confession of Faith and the Declaratory Statement, you'll have a very good idea of what the Presbyterian Church believes in and how we interpret what we've learnt. But it's a changing, all our churches are changing as we must. And if you look at, there will always be nuances you need to understand. For instance, when I was a child, the Presbyterian Church virtually had strict rules forbidding alcohol, and rules that couldn't be broken. Over the years, I've seen many Presbyterian fellows and their ladies enjoy a small quantity of alcohol. And in fact, when I was the convener of the Indemnity Fund Committee, it amazed me when, after a couple of weeks, we used to meet monthly, and about the second time I went in, a guy who I knew to be an ordained minister said, "Ian, when you come in for your lunch, we don't mind if you bring a bottle of wine in to enjoy." I thought that was great, but my secretary used to quite often order pies for lunch, and I didn't know what sort of wine goes with pies. I still don't. So the real thing about alcohol is your minister makes the decision. I've never ever experienced alcohol being served on a church premises. However, I can tell you there's a church in our area who recently arranged a wine and beer tasting for a fundraiser. Now, I'm saying that changes. We are changing. But if you want to extend that and say, well, we want people in, the clubs and the hotels all get them, why aren't we doing that? Well, if we did, we'd be in their position. Every weekend we'd have violence, we'd have criminal behaviour, antisocial behaviour, we'd have security on the doors, and we wouldn't want to be seen like that, I'm sure. So I think you need to understand those little nuances that the Presbyterian Church does. But as far as any alcohol subject goes, we know there's problems there and we avoid them. I mean, you know, the Bible tells you Jesus turned the water into wine. You've got to consider that even in the Middle Ages, children were given wine, but it was only 1 or 2% alcohol. It was only given because the water was poisonous. Today, our table wines are 9%, 14% alcohol. Fortified wines are twice that. It's something, if you're going to be involved in, you need to show a lot of care. I don't want to emphasise that totally, but you need to understand the little differences that the Presbyterian Church does. If I can get to Leviticus, I purposely cherry-picked those verses because the first two tell you it's God's word that Moses spread, the Ten Commandments. And all these verses, I didn't go through them all for a number of reasons. Firstly, because all the depraved sexual side of it is we have laws against, and I believe we've interpreted the Ten Commandments very well. I know we had our friend Israel Folau stand up the other day. We should think about that because he said what he believed in. We disagreed with him when he said, "You will go to hell. We do not believe in judging your fellow Christian." So whilst he did a lot of good, whilst it was great to see him receive Christian support, the way he did that was not the way we consider the word should be spread. And if you are accused of if you're told by a church member you're going to hell, you should talk talk to the minister or your elder, because we don't believe that anyone should judge. Judge not, lest you be judged. Oh, and there are some things in Leviticus that's bring. I mean, a lot of it's changed. We can't look after our Israelite brother, but we can look after our Christian brother. You know, there in I think it's 23 that consumption of meat with the blood still in it was forbidden. There's a very good reason for that. In fact, if you know the meat industry, the meat you eat today, when the beast is slaughtered, it is stunned, and then the blood is let right out of that beast. That's because blood carries bacteria. Those of you who've had an operation on a bone will know that if you have a slight lesion on any part of your body, your surgeon will turn you away, because your blood could carry that infection into his operation wound, and that could be the worst result you could have. So there were reasons for all these advices. And Leviticus needs, you need to look at it and study it, interpret it, but it's good advice. So I just want to complete the communications train. When you come up against something you don't understand, something that seems out of place in the way a church operates, please refer that to your elder or to Paul. It is our plan and intention to provide advice, guidance and assistance to every member at all times through our understanding of the Bible and how our church functions in God's kingdom. Amen. Thank you, Jeff. Would you like to complete?
Our closing hymn is Standing on the Promise.